Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. As I like to do at the beginning, I want to encourage you to like and subscribe. Like this video or podcast. Please subscribe to the channel on YouTube or wherever you're listening to it. That really helps other people find out about it. Okay, enough of that. Now, we have a great guest today. It's Cameron O'Hearn, who's the director and producer of Mass of the Ages, which is a documentary trilogy, not just a documentary, but a documentary trilogy like Lord of the Rings that explores the richness of the traditional Latin Mass. Cameron, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I love the word trilogy, and I love Peter Jackson, so I'm glad
that's right. It will sell as many copies as Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, about that. Do you have the marketing budget for that?
Because that would be great. Right. Exactly. You didn't get a film in New Zealand or anything like that either.
Not yet, I'll say.
We got to find a traditional Latin Mass community down there. So, okay, so Cameron, I know Cameron. I've helped him out a little bit with the Mass of the Ages documentary, and I'm a big supporter of it. But we'll talk about that in a minute. But I first want to ask you, actually, about your background in filmmaking, because one of the biggest points of this documentary is it's not a basement video with cheap green screen, anything like that. This is the real deal. I've seen enough of this to know this is production quality that you'd see in a Hollywood movie. So I kind of want to know what's your background in filmmaking that you can do this.
Yeah, it depends on how far back we want to go. I'll start at my professional career. So 2012 was also the year I was dating my now wife, found the Latin Mass, discovered the Latin Mass, had my first job in video, which was, I was a videographer for a nonprofit campus ministry. And that's where I learned a lot about how to tell a story to elicit an emotion, because we're trying to raise money for this nonprofit. So instead of giving people a lot of facts and figures about, you know, my dad started this company, like no one cares about that stuff, but you tell a story, you tell a story about a person whose life has changed. And that's what compelling storytelling is. That's why story is a well-worn path in the human brain, I've heard it described as. We've been telling stories for millennia upon millennia, and we're hooked by them. So if you tell a good story, then people will remember what you're saying. You remember good stories, and good stories, you know, cut right to the heart. And so facts and figures and history, that is all up here, and we have all these, you know, barriers. Like, people don't want to think about facts and figures. They have their they have their guard up, right? But with a story, people's guards are down. You're just talking to a person, and you're just learning about a person, and people's guards are down. And so ever since I started in video production, I wanted to do a story-first approach. And so over the last 10 or so years, I've started to work with more and more people. So the cinematographer for Mass of the Ages is a guy I've been working with for like 6 years. And really love working with him. And I realized that the more I focus on what I'm good at, and the more I invite people on to do what they're best at, the better the product's going to be. So Mass of the Ages is certainly not just me running around with a video camera. It's a whole team of people, a lot of people who are the best at what they do. They're industry standard. Cinematographer is absolutely stunning. You've seen his work in the trailers and teasers. I like to focus on directing and editing. We have producers and just a team of people who are just really good at what they do. And that's what makes, you know, when you watch a film, like we mentioned Lord of the Rings earlier, the credits takes like 15 minutes to go through because there's so many people. But then Peter Jackson's name is on it. You're like, oh yeah, Peter Jackson. But who was the cinematographer for Lord of the Rings? Who is the editor? Like, those things, you don't remember them, but every role is critical. And that's how Mass of the Ages is. I'm steering this big ship, but I didn't make this big ship. Hopefully it's not the Titanic, but this big ship is, I'm steering it, and a lot of work has gone into it to get it to this point.
Yeah, and I just want to back that up. I think I was one of the first people you interviewed for it.
Yeah, so I'll give a little bit of background. So we had this idea has been to make this documentary on the Latin Mass has been around for several years, and I had talked with my wife about it, prayed about it, just like it just wasn't the right time. We had written up proposals and sent them to different traditional, you know, organizations just to say, we want to make a film. Can we make this film? Please let us make this film. And we decided we just need to like show what we can do. And so what we did is we dovetailed a production. So we already had my crew in town for a different production. And we were in Ohio. It was like, okay, we're filming at my parish. Eric Sammons is nearby and he's great. And let's just show people what we can do. So let's, you know, invest some money to get the best camera gear and to get a big crew, and let's just film the Mass and get some B-roll and some interviews and just put together a teaser. And so that was a little over a year ago. We put together a teaser, actually filmed with you, Eric, right before COVID.
I remember that thing. Yep. That's right. It was like just a few weeks before COVID hit.
Yeah. So we were all in town and it was right around then. And then we ran a Kickstarter in June, and it was wildly successful. So that's where that started.
Yeah, and I was very impressed when you came to my house to film it, because I had no idea who you were. And you're just like, I want to do this documentary in Latin Mass. I'm like, well, it sounds good. And I would be honest, I was a little bit like, should I do this? Because, I mean, if it's some joker, I mean, you know, because there are jokers out there. But I was just like blown away when you guys showed up, because you had a team. I mean, I don't even think that was like a tiny team at that point, because yep. I know you've added since then, but I think three or four guys came. You had some very nice equipment. My daughter is studying communications and video, and so I kind of know enough to know what's impressive. And it was like, and you took it so seriously, like everything about it, the whole team took very seriously. Okay, how are we going to have them sit? You know, how are we going to do the lighting? And you tried different things. And this was just for an interview with me for the teaser. I mean, it wasn't even like, you know, doing a Mass or anything like that. And I knew you were going to do a dry Mass like the next day up in Dayton. So it just was, it was very impressive. And I was like, okay, these guys are taking this seriously. That's when I was like, okay, I'm on board with this, because it's not a bunch of jokers with like their iPhones, you know, filming something. This is like the real deal. Because I do think that's key, is like, if you want to produce something well, like you said, telling the story is the most fundamental part of it. But in our age today, good production values, people take it more seriously if it has good production values, because they're used to good production values, like Lord of the Rings, like the, you know, Avengers movies or whatever the case may be. So I was very impressed with that. And I still, though, what I'd like you to answer right now, though, is why on the traditional Latin Mass? Because you guys, obviously, you have a talented team. You could produce anything in the Catholic world, or even you could go outside the Catholic world. Why did you think, okay, I have to produce something on the traditional Latin Mass in particular?
Yeah, I think we've all been in the situation where we've witnessed the Latin Mass. Like, whatever happens Monday through Saturday, we show up at the Latin Mass and we just like, wow, this is what I needed. You know, this is just a solid foundation in a time of greater and greater moral, spiritual confusion in the world, a world that is hostile to the Catholic Church. So you want a liturgy on Sunday that's Catholic on level 11. And we've all had that experience of being at Mass and like, man, I wish my brother knew about this. You know, when I talk about the Latin Mass to him, I wish he understood like what that meant and how important it was. And there's, you know, if you unpack it, if you peel back the layers, there's so many misconceptions about what the Latin Mass is or who the people are who attend Latin Mass. So there's just this moment from the very beginning of like, Lord, I want to share this with the world. Like, I, Yes, I can make a documentary about anything. You know, I really love board games, and I have an idea for a documentary on board games. But there isn't. I want to make a documentary on the Latin Mass because now is the time. Like I'm compelled to tell the world about this treasure. And I think we've all been in that situation, right, of like, I love the Latin Mass, and I wish more people knew about it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things I was attracted to with your project is that there is just admittedly a lot of baggage that's associated with traditional Latin Mass, deserved or undeserved. I think most of it's undeserved. But the fact of the matter is there's a certain image of people who go to Latin Mass, people of the Latin Mass itself by a lot of Catholics and non-Catholics that I think it's very difficult sometimes to get over that. So like you say, your brother or somebody like that, you're trying to talk to them about the Latin Mass and they just go, let's say, to their regular diocesan parish and they have a conception already before you, as soon as you say you go to a traditional Latin Mass, I feel like there's about 15 different things they now think about you that may or may not be true. Probably most of them are not true. And so I like the fact that this is trying to overcome that and show that it really is normal. People go to it. And one thing I want to state is like, I say that, and that's not to denigrate the people who've been going to traditional Latin Mass for decades. And I consider them some of the finest Catholics, you know, around, but the stereotype is a stereotype, whether it's deserved or not. And trying to overcome that is an important thing. I think that's one of the things. Would you agree that's kind of one of the things you're trying to do with the documentary?
From the beginning, we talked about rebranding the traditional Latin Mass movement. And not to make it less traditional and less true and make it more, you know, hip or anything like that. But it's just about showing what you just said, that these are normal people. They're just people who love the church. They love, like I said, they love Catholic culture, and they want a mass that reflects what they believe as Catholics. And there's just so many misconceptions, not just about the people, but about the mass itself. Like people think, oh, you go to Latin Mass because you also like going to the opera. It's just like you're a little more cultured or something. Or they think that the Latin Mass is just the same as the new Mass, but in a language that they don't understand. Right. And it's so much more than that. And in order to unpack that for people, you know, they're unlikely to pick up a book. They're unlikely to watch some of these, you know, long videos on YouTube that explain a lot of the differences. But a film is universal. It's become universal. It can capture, you know, the emotions of people, and with a spoonful of story, it helps the facts go down.
Right.
And I want to say too, like you could tell an amazing story with your iPhone. Like, yeah, story is the first thing. Right. But what was really important to us from the beginning was to feature the Latin Mass with the best quality we could, to give it a professional portrayal like you would see in the theaters for any other film. We wanted it because it deserves it. The Mass of the Ages deserves to be seen with, like, in pristine, glorious quality. And that's why we've also been filming masses, not just, you know, like a fly on the wall, actual masses going on, but dry masses with, you know, tabernacles or the Blessed Sacrament's removed, and we can get in those angles that you wouldn't normally see at the Mass, but really capture what's going on. I think that's one of the things I'm most excited for.
Well, it kind of shares an ethos with the traditional Latin Mass itself. We go to like a solemn high Mass. It's like they're trying to do everything they can to make it the most beautiful, mm-hmm. wonderful worship of God possible, giving it all. So it's kind of like that. Now, you've been filming now for over a year and a half, something like that. You've been in a lot of places. So I want to ask you a couple of things about that process. The first thing I have to ask you is, and this is going to put you right on the spot, other than me, of course, who was your favorite interview?
Yeah, I have to kind of parse it in my head because there was interviews that we're filming hearts and brains is what we call them. So you have hearts that really are the foundation to the story we're telling, whatever story we're telling. But people aren't watching this documentary just because they want to feel something. They want it. They want to know, like, what makes this documentary different? Why is it so important? What happened to the new mass and all that? So you need brains as well. And so I'll say the one that comes to mind the most was Father James Jackson.
Oh, he is great.
Littleton, Colorado. So he wrote the book Nothing Superfluous. And in the interview, so Eric, we spent maybe 2 hours with you.
Right.
Probably asked like 20 questions. And that's pretty typical. With him, I asked like 5 questions for the whole time because I just asked the question and then he just goes and he keeps talking. Oh, yeah. And the way he communicates, it's amazing because he's the kind of priest who could easily have a ton of followers, a big platform.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He specifically doesn't want that. He just wants to celebrate Mass, offer the sacraments, minister to his parishioners, and he's just a really holy priest. So that... my favorite thing about him is he knows a lot of stuff and he's really good at communicating it, but you can tell he just loves the Mass and he's just really holy and well-spoken. So
I met Father Jackson about a month or two after I started going attending Latin Mass. I was at FSSP Parish. He came for a conference and I met him. And I tell you, I was immediately struck by him and I was like, this was like 10 years ago. And I was like, wow, okay, this guy's the real deal. I said, I need to look into this a little bit more if it's got priests like this involved with it, because I mean, yeah, he's so knowledgeable, but he's not like a brainiac that he talks on some level you don't understand. He's very down to earth.
So relatable. Yeah. He makes things understandable to you.
Yeah.
Like one example, it's funny. Like it's almost like the cameras melted away and he was just talking to me. He's like, you're married, right? And we started talking about my family. He's like, oh yeah, I see a ring there. So, is that ring necessary for you to become married? Like, no. There's plenty of things in the Latin Mass that aren't strictly necessary, but in one sense, yes, they are necessary because they show our devotion. And I was just like, wow, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great analogy. I won't bring up the fact that I not too long ago lost my wedding ring, but okay.
You did? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, it was awful. It's
that's terrible. Brutal. But, I'm sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to replace it. I've been wanting to replace it because I keep thinking I'll find it, but I've got to give up now. Okay, so what was your... you've also been to a lot of different parishes, a lot of different churches. What was probably your favorite church that you visited where you just were like, wow, this is really awesome? I know you've been to a lot of awesome ones, but which one struck you probably the most?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's St. Joseph Oratory in St. Louis. I believe that's what it's called. It's an institute shrine, and it's recognizable because it's the opening shot of our documentary. So when people see that, that's my favorite church. We went in that church, and it was before we actually dined with the institute priests there, and they're just... Institute priests are excellent. I love those guys. But the church, I remember walking in and just like, we were all quiet for a long time, just looking at it. Just like, that's what you want a church to be, is you just walk in and you can't say anything. You just look at it. And it was so beautiful.
And that's in St. Louis?
Yes, St. Louis.
My wife and I want to take a trip to St. Louis. Now I know exactly one thing we're going to have to do when we're there.
That's right. And make sure they invite you for dinner because they'll go the extra mile.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
That's the thing with the Institute, like the Institute of Christ the King. So you know the fraternity, the Institute, anyone who celebrates the Latin Mass officially sees the liturgy as we want to give the liturgy everything we have. But the Institute does that with everything. with hospitality, like they'll go the extra mile. They'll really treat you well. So yeah, I'll connect you with them if you're traveling up there.
Yeah, that's great. They're
great.
Now, when you were, so you've been, how many different people did you talk to in all your interviews?
Probably 20.
Okay.
20. Yeah, something like that.
And what's something you learned? Because obviously you've been going to traditional Latin Mass for a while, And so you know the basics. What's something, though, in filming this that you're like, wow, I didn't know that about the traditional Latin mass. I didn't know, you know, what's something that you think you learned during the process of filming? I like putting you on the spot here.
No, that's great. It's interesting because before I started this documentary to now, I feel like I've learned everything I know. Like, when I started, what was I even doing? I did not know what was going on. And that's probably a lot of people. Latin Mass, even for people who attend it, like, it's so rich and deep and the history is so involved. So, I mean, it's hard to answer that question because almost everything I know now about the Latin Mass is something I learned while being on set.
It is amazing how you can always be learning something.
I think maybe... One of the biggest things was the amount of prayers that were removed from the old mass to the new mass.
Right.
I knew that there was some differences, like the prayers for the altar and all that. But then you notice things like the lavabo, Psalm 25, where the priest is washing his hands. He's praying Psalm 25 because it's the only place in Scripture that mentions washing and hands. So
other than maybe Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, right. Maybe the only place in the Psalms then.
Yeah.
And if you just look at the new mass, all the priest says is, Lord, you know, cleanse me from my iniquity and wash me from my sin. For some reason, they took out this glorious, beautiful psalm. And then obviously they took out the offertory oration, the psalm. And I was just surprised and shocked at the extent of the things that were removed, and people just don't know that.
Right.
Like I said earlier, they think it's just, they're just different languages, but there's so much more to that. Like, there's almost twice as many prayers in the new, in the old mass than the new mass.
Right.
And then I'm reading this book by Father Cicada, yeah, and we got Lauren Priestos and another book that, and this scholarship is actually very recent, talking about, you know, we have Ratzinger Benedict and we have Klaus Gamber and them talking about kind of a 20,000 foot view on the changes after Vatican II and the extent and how they went too far. But right, only recently has there been actual, like, textual comparisons between the old mass and the new mass to show the actual extent of how much was removed. And it's all very shocking and insightful.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you've been involved with traditional Latin Mass for a while, you start to recognize, you know, that a lot of these prayers, how different the prayers are and how things are removed, not just the language. But it's still commonly thought, I think, by most Catholics that really the only difference is the language, that it's in Latin. And it really, there's nothing that different from it. I mean, obviously the basic structure in a lot of ways is the same. But it is amazing how many things were taken out, and everything, almost everything taken out probably came from Scripture, because almost every prayer in the Latin Mass is from Scripture. Like you mentioned, you know, the prayers for the altar, Psalm 42, the washing of the hands is Psalm 25. I think you said, you know, it's so much of it is the Psalms and the prayers of the church. So it's kind of hard to swallow that those things are being taken out.
Yeah, I know. Like Sacra Sanctum Concilium, I think it's paragraph 23, because I was just looking at this the other day, talks about how, so this is the document on the liturgy. It's the Second Vatican Council. It sets out the principles for the reform of the Missal. And it says, no innovation must be done unless it's certainly and genuinely required for the good of the faithful. Right. And so you scratch your head and wonder, okay, why was it certainly and genuinely required to remove Psalm 42 and Psalm 25 and a lot of these right, propers from the Mass and Gregorian chant and polyphony? And was it, I mean, the question kind of answers itself, but right, something fishy is going on here. Like, they just went too far, and it's right, shocking when you actually look into it.
Yeah. Now, the movie originally was going to be a single movie. I assume it was going to be regular movie length, like an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. But now, yep, not too long ago, you announced it's a trilogy. And the question is, why is it a trilogy? And how do you keep it from like, okay, so like when you have these books, I'm trying to make this point here that when you have books, sometimes a book series, they start getting, okay, I'll use the Harry Potter as the example, which I know people, I'm not trying to bring up Harry Potter time. The first ones were tightly edited and short, relatively short. The later ones are huge and they look like, you know, there was no editor and they get bloated a bit. And so the question is, how do you keep, why did you go with trilogy and how do you keep it from being a bloated type of thing where, you know, Lord of the Rings is great. It does a trilogy well, but like the Hobbit trilogy is awful because it just got, you didn't have the material for a trilogy there. So
yeah, I'd love to come back on and just talk films sometime. Yeah, right. the answer to the question is actually very similar because the way you keep it from not getting overextended and bloated or too constricted and confusing is through a lot of checks and balances. So it's not just me editing a thing and then putting it out there. It's you edit it. I show my wife. That's a wife draft. Right. You just sit in the room with her. Let's see what she thinks. And it's magic when you make something and if you just have someone else in the room and you play it for them, you see all the mistakes. You're like, okay, I got it. I'm gonna change all these things and go back to it. So there's wife drafts. Then there's obviously a team draft. And what we did several months ago, was we had rough draft of Mass of the Ages as one film. And we all met together while we were on production in St. Louis. And we watched it. And it was an hour and a half, which is the length we wanted. And the overwhelming thing we noticed was there's too much going on for it to just be one film. And we didn't articulate it in that way, but there was a bunch of comments showed it that it was, there's too much going on, too many stories, too many things we were trying to cover. And so it got put back on the chopping block, so to speak. So that we have these checks and balances. So then we go back to the edit. And I remember my wife and I were driving to Cleveland, had about a 4-hour drive. And my wife is great because she, you know, for the past 3 years, she's been a part of this project and she's like a sponge and I tell everything going on and she takes everything in. So she's become like an expert in the film just through talking about it, watching it. And we just took a 4-hour drive to say, okay, everything's on the table. Like, let's talk about the film. What are the problems with it? What are we trying to do? And we realized we have three films here. Like the more we're talking about, we have three films. We have three overarching stories. We have three very different topics we're trying to cover. And instead of trying to squeeze it all into 90 minutes, we can let the film breathe, split it up into three films, have a much more manageable size. So now they're 45 minutes for a film. People are much more likely to watch something that's 45 minutes than an hour and a half. Once you get past that hour mark, it just feels unwieldy sometimes. And it just, everything started to fall into place after that. So three films, three stories, three very different topics. So film one became about, it's an introduction to the Latin Mass. Let's show how the Latin Mass is a solid foundation in a time of confusion and disorder. And it's emotional, it's inspiring, and it leaves you wanting more. Episode two gets a little nerdy and interesting and surprising. It's an investigation into the creation of the new Mass with Annibale Bonini and the Concilium and Pope St. Paul VI, and talks about everything going on there. Episode three then, so this is what's so interesting. This is how the Lord kind of ordains this all. Episode three originally was a little bit more like, okay, let's talk about the future of the Latin Mass, but that was the only one of the three films where I was like, I don't know. I know what it's going to look like, but it doesn't feel like a full film. And then we started to hear about this modo proprio coming out. Like, oh my goodness. Like, okay, I wanted to make a documentary on the Latin Mass last year, and now it's become a trilogy that is a response to the Pope himself.
Right.
It's not me versus Pope Francis, right, but it's just the way the Lord has ordained it. Now right, we have a trilogy, and episode three is about, all right, this modo proprio comes out. What does that mean? What is the fallout? Let's find parishes across the world that are suffering, from now they feel homeless. They don't have a Latin mass anymore, whereas they used to. And let's see what how it kind of plays out. So now we have this trilogy that's coming out, and the Lord has just ordained it to be three very different films to cover kind of the gamut of what people want to talk about when they say Latin mass. And you don't, episode one, like, the problem is if we just release a film, the Mass of the Ages, one single film, people over here are going to say, oh, it's too like emotional. I wanted something more educational. And then some people say, oh, it's too educational. I wanted more emotion. But you have three films and you can really like make them very different. And the trilogy as a whole, I think, will be just this masterclass in what is the traditional Latin Mass and why is it so important.
So each film is 45 minutes, you said?
Yes.
Approximately? Okay. And then the first one, though, is being released August 15th.
Correct.
2021. Are there dates set for the other two?
So what I can say is we want episode two to be out this year, so before the end of the year. And what we want to do is do a national screening tour with episodes one and two. So basically, people can watch episode one for free online. That's great. You can watch it on YouTube. It'll also eventually be on our website. But if you really want to experience the Mass of the Ages, we're also producing a theater quality version. So with color and audio, you have to process the audio differently so you can experience it in surround sound. We want people to come to the theaters, invite their friends and family who don't go to the Latin Mass, who are curious about it, maybe they think it's weird, invite priests, bishops. We want to do a national screening tour, open it up globally so people can host their own screenings. And we want to have episodes one and two available as a theater quality version so people can watch it in theaters, experience it in all its glory, and build up the hype for episode three.
Okay.
And that'll be before the end of the year. Episode three will be out next year, but I can't really promise the date because this is a story that's currently unfolding.
Right.
We don't want to prematurely release it because what if Motu Proprio version two comes out?
Right.
What if we have a new pope? I don't know. I don't know.
We don't yet know how all the bishops are going to react because most of them are just taking a wait and see approach. So
that's right. So we want to wait. We don't want to rush it. We have so much of episode three already in the can, is what they say, already filmed and on our drives and edited, put together. You know, we have drafts of episode three, but we really want to make episode three what is the future of the Latin Mass and how do we process this motu proprio as faithful Catholics?
So episode one, when it comes out on August 15th, the primary way in which it's going to be released is on YouTube. Is that correct?
Originally, it'd be on YouTube.
Okay.
Yep. And so anyone can watch it for free.
Anyone
can
watch it for free. And then episode two will come out before the end of the year, and that will also be released on YouTube or whatever for free.
Only way you can watch episode two originally is in theaters when we're doing the screening tour. Yep.
Okay. But that will be also combined with episode one, correct?
Yes. It'll be a double feature in theaters. At a theater near you.
Okay. And then at some point, do you expect that you put episode two up on the internet after you've...
Eventually.
Okay.
Eventually, all three films, they will all be available free online. Okay. We're not charging people to watch these films. You know, if someone is hosting a screening, they'll get the license to show the film. And then they might charge seats because they're raising money for a seminary or something like that. But we're not going to charge any money. This film has been funded by so many generous people. We've been blessed to make it, and we want to reach as many Catholics as we can. So we're giving it away for free. The money that comes in, we just want to put back into marketing and distribution and just reach. We want to reach 10 million Catholics who've never been to the Latin Mass. And we want to reach thousands of priests who have not started to celebrate the Latin Mass. And we want to all inspire them all to embrace the Latin Mass and to start celebrating it, to start seeking it out. And what a perfect time to start doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So if somebody wants to have it on their like when the theatrical release comes, I guess what you do is you just contact your local theater and say, I'd like to have a showing of this film and I have the licensing for it. And you just, and you deal with however your local theater allows it. And then you would invite people and say, okay, on Thursday at 8 o'clock at the local theater, we're going to be showing. Is that how that basically works?
Yeah, there will be a place on our website eventually where you can license the film. So we do need to charge for that license because in order to optimize the film for theaters, we have to pay a little more in our own licenses, like in the footage and songs we're using and we're licensing. But once you have that license, then you can show it in the theater. It allows you to show it in a theater. So you just find a local theater near you and you will get the theater quality version, the thing that they can use to project it. And we can help you. Our marketing team can help you organize that if you need help. Now, some people can just pull it off themselves, and that's great. But if you have any questions, as episode 2 comes out, you'll start to see more information on that, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Good. Now, I meant to ask this before, and I forgot. Who are some of the people that are interviewed on Mass the Ages that I guess people will be familiar with? Obviously, I know there's some. What I like about it is that you have some quote unquote regular people who are just talking about their experience, which I think is very important. But who are some of the names of people other than Father Jackson, of course?
Yeah, exactly like you said. Our main approach was not celebrities, it was experts. And sometimes those overlap and sometimes they don't. And so, but the people you would recognize, people like Dr. Taylor Marshall, maybe Dr. Michael Foley, who wrote the book Drinking with the Saints, Kevin Allen, who's a composer and choir master of sacred music in Chicago. He writes music in Chicago for St. John Cantius, I believe. We also have 3 bishops who were brave enough to be in this film.
Maybe braver than they thought.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, you're really brave. If they only knew. Bishop Strickland, and then 2 bishops from Lincoln, Bishop Emeritus Breskowitz and Bishop Conley. And then we have word from Bishop Athanasius Schneider that he wants to be in the film, and we're just working out how we can make that happen. So those are the first names that come to mind.
Great. Bishop Conley, I worked with him long ago when he was a priest and he was a chaplain of a pro-life group I was part of. He's a great bishop, and I believe he went to school with Father Jackson, and they I think they converted even like similar, like they were both Protestant, I think. I'm not sure if I got the story right.
You're right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yep. Yeah. Bishop Conley shared a little bit of his story. He's also really down to earth and a really good bishop.
He
treated us very well.
Yeah, he's great. Okay, so I just want to briefly, we're going to wrap it here pretty soon, but I did want to briefly talk about the motu proprio, which we've brought up a couple times. And obviously you did this, you've worked on this for 18 months, something like that, before this came out, and you were just, your plan to drop it August 15th. I think you announced that like at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we had no idea.
And so then all of a sudden this happens. And it's like, oh my goodness, this really changes. I mean, it doesn't change anything in one sense, I know, but it changes everything in another sense, because now, I don't know about you, but I feel like it turns a traditional Catholic movement into more of a bunker mentality, whether we should be or not, because it's like we feel a little bit more under attack. I had a great, in my parish where I go is Oratorian Parish, and we have both the Latin Mass and the New Mass there. And our pastor is telling us that one of the longtime members who goes to, it's said in German, but it's a Novus Ordo Mass. He said to Father after the motu proprio came out, he goes, I feel like my family's being attacked.
Wow.
You know, he doesn't attend the Latin Mass, but it's his family, because it's like people in his parish that he cares about. And I do feel like a lot of traditional Catholics probably feel a bit on the attack, like in the bunker. How do you think this changes the purpose of Mass of the Ages, the documentary? Does it change it at all? I mean, how do you think that changes things?
I think it does change everything, and not in the sense of content and approach so much as just what's in the air and how people are going to react to it, what the response is going to be from it. How did you feel when you read the Motu Proprio for the first time?
I mean, my first reaction was anger. I mean, that's just, I couldn't, I mean, that's the first thing I was just like angry. I mean, I wasn't that surprised, but I still was angry because I was like, this is, because what I read, when I read it, I was like, this is not the people I know, the way he characterized in there, this, you know, this, it just isn't, it isn't the people I know. I mean, I think when I think of the traditional Latin mass movement, I think of I have a very positive association with it, in that this is a movement that is helping the church in so many ways. It's preaching the gospel. It's doing so many wonderful things and contains so many wonderful people. And so it was like that guy who felt like his family was being attacked. I felt like that too. Not me. It's like, you know, I don't care what he thinks about me, but I felt like I know these beautiful people and they love it. And they draw closer to Christ, and he's treating it like some, you know, infection that needs to be removed from the system. And so, yeah, that was probably my first reaction.
Yeah, I felt similar. I felt hurt. I felt confused. I've said this before, that I felt like I was disciplined by my father for something I didn't do. Right. And if I knew this Motu Proprio was going to come out, I would have made this trilogy. So it's like, it's amazing because we can feel very helpless when we read a Motu Proprio like this. I mean, this is coming from our Holy Father, and he's the man at the top. And so It can feel very, you can feel very helpless. But the Lord has been ordaining things for a purpose. And like I said, we had no idea that this is going to happen. But we've been working on this trilogy leading up to this moment, this very moment, to show that, you know, the Latin mass communities are not divisive. They're people who love Catholic faith, and they're not made up of a bunch of Vatican II deniers. They're not even talking about Vatican II. You get some wacky people who all they want to talk about is Vatican II, but the vast majority of people are just a bunch of young families, love the Latin mass, and they're happy and joyful. They give a ton of money to their bishop. They're good parishioners. And the Latin mass is just misunderstood all the way to the top, all the way to His Holiness Pope Francis. And so this is the trilogy I would have wanted to make, and we're making it, and it's gonna, little do they know, it's coming out very soon. And yeah, I think it changes everything. He gave us quite the marketing push.
Yeah, what's your plan to get Pope Francis to watch it?
Well, I think he's going to see it, honestly.
Yeah, I think you're probably
right. I think it eventually, it's not like he's scrolling Facebook and following our page or anything, but the people surrounding Pope Francis have a narrative they're trying to create. And once they see that there's this film series that's challenging that narrative, and it's making the rounds, there's this screening tour, it's been shown all over the world, they're going to have to react to it. And I think the Holy Father will see it. I think he'll be surprised that it's not just an attack on the Novus Ordo, that it's actually, it takes a more inspiring, positive approach. It doesn't pull punches. I will say that we handle it with tact. When we get to episode 2, when we're talking about the changes, we're handling it with tact, and like an older brother would talk to a younger brother about something he disagrees with. You know, it's with love. And from the very beginning, we've been approaching this project like with that way. We don't want to have hatred in our hearts. We don't want to divide the church. In fact, the Latin Mass is, this is the crazy thing about the Motu Proprio. We're not dividing the church. There's so much unity in the Latin Mass parishes. Like, no matter where you go, you're getting the same liturgy, you're getting people, the 99% of them believing in the real presence, and who understand the church's teachings on love and sexuality. This is unifying. It's a unifying force. It's the opposite. when you have liturgies that are different just across the street from each other and right. on the whims of the pastor. And it was just shocking. Like the Latin Mass is the great unifying force in the church. And I think what we're going to see with this documentary is our response to that. And I think it's going to make a big impact.
Yeah, I really believe that this documentary is very providential, because when you started this, when you first approached me, you know, early on, stuff like that, I mean, I was like, hey, this sounds like a good idea. And it was a good idea. But it
didn't feel urgent.
Right. There wasn't the meaning.
It was urgent to me. But yeah, exactly. Right. It wasn't urgent to the world, so
right,
to speak.
Right. And now I really feel like I honestly believe this is the response to the motu proprio. This is the traditional Latin Mass community's response to the motu proprio, is this documentary. Because, I mean, as you said, it had such support. I mean, unbelievable how much money you raised for this, which showed a unifying movement behind let's back this. And everybody knew when they supported this is not a tax on Vatican II. This is not a tax on Novus Ordo, anything like that. This is simply saying, here's who we are, here's what we believe, and here's why we believe it. And so it just does seem to me that this is very providential that it's literally coming out a month after, almost to the day, a month after when the motu proprio came out. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's a beautiful way that we can respond that is a loving, charitable way. I'm glad you say also, like, episode two won't pull punches. It doesn't help. It's not charitable to act like, you know, when there's differences, act like there aren't differences.
Yeah.
So it's great. So let's wrap it up there. But what I want you to do now is tell me, where can people find out about the Mass of Ages, get updates and things like that?
Yeah, go to theliturgy.org. That's our website. We have resources on there. We have a TLM finder on there. Information about how you can watch the premiere. So, like I said, it's going to be available on YouTube on the 15th, 8 p.m. Eastern time. But if something happens, I don't know what YouTube's going to do, we want to be able to still send you a link so you can watch it. So make sure you go to our website, you click Get Notified, so we can send you a private link to the film so you can watch on YouTube with us live. Or if something happens, you can still see it. So theliturgy.org, and then click Get Notified. And then our main channels, we're on Facebook and Twitter at Liturgy Film, but on YouTube you can find us at Mass of the Ages, and on Instagram at Mass of the Ages.
Great. Okay, I'll make sure I link to theliturgy.org. Definitely go there. If you haven't already signed up for the mailing list, do that so you can know exactly when it's coming out, when the next episodes coming out, and also they're adding, like you said, they're adding things to the site, like the TLM finder, which is a great resource and constantly updated these days. So I just encourage everybody to do that and go to that site. Okay, Cameron, thanks so much for being on Crisis Point today. I'm looking forward to it. I'm anxiously awaiting. I'm definitely going to be telling everybody I know to watch it. I've heard great things about it already. So God bless you.
Thank you, Eric. We should screen something together.
Just that's true. We don't live that far apart. I know. That's right. We should. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. I just realized I'm going to be out of town that night. I got to figure out a way to watch this when it comes out. But okay. Well, thanks, Cameron. I appreciate it. God bless you. And everybody else, until next time, God love you.
Thanks, Eric.